It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome into The Stinking Truth Podcast. Mark Schlereth alongside my co-host, Mike Evans. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. Thank you for subscribing and sharing with all your friends and family and everybody else. We appreciate you guys helping us grow the podcast. It has been absolutely awesome the last several weeks. So thank you guys so much for that. Mike, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. Doing great. Yeah. We're as we're talking here right now, we are T-minus 1 week to go.
Thank goodness.
Until the draft.
Oh, my gosh. Is it not? Hey, it was like a fast and furious, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it just kind of came to a screeching halt where there was no new information. There's not really a lot. It just feels like everybody's sitting on their hands right now.
Well, I saw an interview. This is wild, and this guy is going to figure prominently in this podcast. Bill Belichick on with Pat McAfee, talking about strange bedfellows. But
right.
Apparently, Bill is going to be co-hosting with McAfee a draft special as we get closer to the draft. So we heard Belichick. It's always fascinating to me when you hear Belichick actually talk real. And he's not just in,
right.
You know, we're on to Cincinnati, you know,
yeah,
monotone.
Right.
Because you've met with him, and
sure. He's
a really engaging guy with actual personality that doesn't always come out. But anyway, he was saying that anything that you're hearing right now about the draft,
right,
players moving up, players moving down, is all agent-driven. That the real, real stuff, you know, that's going to come out, won't come out until a couple of days before the draft. That'll be from the teams. But everything else you're hearing right now is all from the agents.
Yeah, and from a team's perspective, like, why would you want your business out there in the streets? You don't want your business in the streets. You want to keep everything, you know, close to the vest. You don't want anybody to know exactly what your plans are, because you want to keep yourself as, you know, as I think as fluid as possible from a movement standpoint, where you want to go, what you want to get. You don't want people to know who you're on, right? Because then all of a sudden it becomes one of those situations where people can use that information against you. So at this point, as far as the teams are concerned, you know, if they're talking, they're lying. They always talk about that. But bottom line, it doesn't behoove you at all if you're a team right now to give any information to anybody. So you're keeping it all as close to the vest as possible.
Yeah, it's funny because here in Denver, Sean Payton and George Payton are holding a pre-draft press conference later on today. Every team does one, but it's so hilarious because you're going to get absolutely nothing out of it.
Right.
It's going to be a bunch of, well, we might move up.
Right.
We might move back.
Right.
We might stay right where we are.
I know it.
Oh, hey, thanks. That was really illuminating.
Yes, exactly. It's like the hokey pokey. You stick your right foot in. I pull your right foot out. Like, right? It's just it's like.
Oh, no, keep going.
No.
Please. I think everybody wants to see it.
So, yeah, that's what they're doing right now. And it's complete, you know, it's misguided and it's complete, you know, garbage is what it is. So, I mean, that's where they are right now.
So, more with Belichick here. So, what do you make of this story that's going around that Robert Kraft maybe sabotaged Belichick's chances of getting the job in Atlanta? Because it sure seemed for all of us that it was going to be Atlanta. It seemed like it was trending that way, and then all of a sudden it cooled. Well, some of the reports out there say that Robert Kraft called Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, to warn him not to trust Bill Belichick.
Right.
Kraft was a big part of why the Falcons passed on hiring Belichick, and that Kraft found Belichick to be extremely difficult and obstinate and stubborn and, in the end, arrogant to work with in New England.
Sure, you know, it's interesting because I think, one, I think it's kind of like the telephone game. You know how you play that when you're in grade school, right? The teacher would whisper in little Mikey's ear, and then you would pass it to the next person.
Right.
By the time it got down to the very end, it's completely opposite or completely different than what the original message was. And I'm sure there was a conversation that went on between owners, right? Between Robert Kraft and Arthur Blank. 100% sure that happened. But I think Robert Kraft was probably honest. Hey, man, he's hard to work with. He's stubborn. You know, he's a bit of a turd, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff. But he knows what he wants. He understands what he wants. He understands the football aspect of that. So if you can deal with that, you know, it's fine. But I think Robert Kraft was probably very honest. I don't think he was like, hey, don't hire this guy. this high guy, what does he know? I mean, come on, you won 7 world championships. You went to 9 with Bill Belichick. I think that's right, right? 9?
6. They won 6.
They won 6. Oh, yeah, Brady won 7. Yeah. Oh, good. Brady. They won 6.
More on him in a moment.
Right. They won 6. Did they go to... How many did they go to?
They lost 3. They went to 9 3? In New England.
They lost to the Giants twice. Who else?
And Philly. Philly special.
Philly, that's right. NFC East.
Boy, your hatred of Philly goes so deep. No wonder Eagle fans hate you.
Eagle fans love me.
Eagle fans do not love
you. They love me.
They don't love you.
They love me more than
Eagle
Giant fans
do. Eagle fans, you love Stink?
Eagle fans love me a lot more than Giant fans.
True.
Giant fans really hate me.
True. True
Along
that.
With Cincinnati fans. Who else have I pissed off?
Jet fan.
Jet fan. Yeah, but the Jet fan just is mad at themselves.
Browns yeah. fans.
You're not mad at me, you're mad at your father.
Browns fans.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Anyhow, the list is long. I mean, get in the line. Yeah, if you want to come throw some hate my way, the list is long. Get in line. So what were we talking about?
Belichick.
Belichick. Yeah, I don't. Do I think that Robert Kraft was honest? Yes. Do I think that Robert Kraft said, don't hire Bill Belichick? No, I don't. I think
But
that,
coming on the heels of the Dynasty, that 10-part documentary in which it was basically universally slammed as being a real hit piece on Belichick.
Right.
Now, Kraft has said that, hey, you know, we didn't have anything to do with it, even though Kraft Productions is on the actual.
I don't know who's in charge here, but I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
Right. So when you start to put the different circumstances together, are we talking about a guy in Kraft who's trying to diminish Belichick's accomplishments in New England to somehow make himself look better or to justify the direction the franchise is going in, to grab back control of his team?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm so you're basically saying there's a Jerry Jones element to what's going on right now with Robert Kraft and the New England Patriots. Like, damn it, it wasn't you. You know, it wasn't, you know, Aikman and Emmett Smith
and
it wasn't
Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson. Yeah, yeah. It was me, damn it. Well, you know, is there an element
of
that?
Does it feel a little like that?
It does feel, you know, I think you just have to enjoy the run that you were on, right? But I'll give you that. That does feel a little bit like there is something to regaining, or maybe it's just about, you know, how bad the last couple of years have been. And so now it's about, hey, man, I'm taking control of my organization. And, you know, this hasn't gone well. And, you know, with the whole, we're going to have dual coordinators and all that kind of stuff. Like, but I will tell you, man, Bill Belichick, when it comes to just football, dude is brilliant. And I don't throw that. Well, because he is stubborn and obstinate, and he is all those things that you mentioned. He can be an ass.
But
absolutely.
In a league that's desperate to win?
Well, there's that aspect of it, and then there's the other aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is this league is, from an ownership standpoint, you give me young, especially offensive play caller, that is Viagra to 80-year-old owners. I mean, they cannot get enough of that stuff, right? That is like, I am at full attention.
Oh.
You had me at hello. Oh. So, I mean, so they want, and which is stupid when you think about young, right? Like, hey, the guy's a young, he's really going to connect with the players. Man, you either have the ability to communicate with people or you don't. And especially the younger generation of people, they don't grow up, you know, talking on the phone, they grew up texting people. So you have to be very careful about thinking that youth connects with youth. Just because you're a young coach does not mean you automatically connect with younger players. Your ability to communicate, your ability to touch people, your ability to connect with people, your ability to articulate your point, your ability for people to understand that is a skill. And just because you're young does not mean that you possess that skill. I'll give you a for instance. There is not a guy on the planet that connects better with the players that he coaches than Wade Phillips. That dude connects with players, man. The guy's 100. Wade is, like, he's old. His head's going to fall off. I mean, he's an old dude, but he totally resonates and connects with his players. So I don't buy all that bullshit about, oh, you got to be young and you got to be, you know, innovative and you got to be. How'd that work for Brandon Staley? You know, how's that work for some of the young coaches that got fired?
But do you think it goes maybe a little deeper, though? Have we already kind of maybe circled around to the real reason, and that is control? Jerry Jones decided he didn't like the feeling that he was losing control with Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Maybe Kraft with Belichick. Hey, maybe you even saw it near the end here in Denver when Mike Shanahan, who Pat Boland had once said would be the coach for life, and then Pat ended up letting him go. Was there a sense that maybe Mike Shanahan had gained too much control?
Well, I think
too much power.
I think you make a great point. And I think from a control standpoint, what I know, what I know about operating an organization in the NFL is there's got to be a system of checks and balances. And there has got to be healthy debate and dissension, if you will. You have to be able to argue things. And you have to be able to put your foot down. And you have to be able to say, you know, hey, we're not going to do it this way. I'll never forget, and I think this is a big connection point within an organization. Like my offensive line coach, Alex Gibbs, when I was here in Denver, I can tell you, man, more on multiple occasions where he went out in the hallway and got into a shouting match with Mike Shanahan on a certain protection or a certain play. And Mike wanted to do something like, hey man, we got a dual read to the, we're turning our protection, let's say, to the weak side linebacker, right? But if the weak side linebacker doesn't come and the corner blitzes, let's just take him. And Alex go, you can't, he'd be like, you can't do that. Either call the corner or you call the weak side linebacker, but I can't break. At some point, the quarterback has to pick up somebody. Right. Some point, he's got to throw the ball hot. I can't ask a non-athlete that plays offensive line to go, okay, let me check that guy. Oh, he didn't come. Let me bounce out here and take a 4-3 corner off the edge. Like, how stupid are you? You can't do that. And you have to be able to fight a little bit. And you have to be able to – and the problem is when a guy gets control – he wants more control, and then he wants more control, and then eventually you surround yourself with people that just say yes. And people who just say yes ultimately get you fired, and that's the problem.
And it looks like that may have happened in New England, and you might be seeing that Belichick backlash, at least through Robert Kraft. We mentioned Tom Brady. Okay, I know you can't go a full podcast without talking about your man Brady. So we were discussing earlier in the week the idea that Brady leaving the door open if the right team called to perhaps coming back and playing again.
Right.
And he mentioned New England. He mentioned the Raiders, a team that did not come up that I think needs to be linked to Brady are the Denver Broncos. And that's because of Sean Payton. And here's my theory.
Okay.
Follow the breadcrumbs, see if you can connect the dots.
Should I put on a tinfoil cap?
No, there's no, because this was reported and there was actual punishment given to the Miami Dolphins for tampering. It was understood that the plan was for Sean Payton to coach the Miami Dolphins, leave New Orleans to go coach the Dolphins, and Tom Brady to leave Tampa to go go play quarterback for the Dolphins. For owner Stephen Ross, a Michigan guy, that was the plan. Brady and Payton in Miami. It blew up because of the Brian Flores lawsuit. And so that didn't end up happening. Brady stayed in Tampa. Payton took the year off from football and ended up doing television. But these two were ready to work together. If Tom's interested in coming back, why not here in Denver?
You know, he's going to be 47 years old. 47. Now, I'll add to that, not that it's conspiracy theory, but I'll add to the theory. Do you remember when he was like 38, and he's still at the peak of his power, saying that he could play until he was 50, And we all, at that time, I was, you know, on ESPN, and we all kind of chuckled, right? It was like, oh, you're so cute, Tom. And then people were writing him off at 39 or 30, 40, like, oh, this guy is washed. He can't play anymore. And yet, in his seasons where he was 44 and 45 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he threw 68 touchdowns, had a 67% completion percentage, threw 1,400-plus balls and 900. Like, the numbers are just ridiculous.
He set career highs at age 44 and 45.
On pass attempts.
For pass attempts and pass completions in a season.
And he was dead serious. He goes, I could play till I was 50. We all laughed. Well, who's laughing now, especially if somebody makes the phone call? Dude, I would.
Seems like he wants to play again.
I would love to see Tom Brady come back and do it. At 47 years old, plus, you know he's getting the protection of the league, right? I mean, you know you're not allowed to hit Brady.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, isn't he part owner of the Raiders? Not yet. That's still being... Right. Negotiated by the NFL, because the NFL has concerns about the idea that a franchise that's worth $3.5, $4, $5 billion, that the slice of the pie that Brady is getting potentially and what he's paying, it's too much of a bargain for Brady. It's not real value for what he should be paying. So that's
just
still
put
the,
a sign out.
That's still the holdup.
Just a big sign and walk around and like to every NFL city, say, we'll work for ownership. Right? We'll play QB. We'll play QB for ownership. Dude, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see Brady back and love to see what he could still accomplish at this age. It's must-see television.
Do you think he could still play?
Oh, without question. Could he come in and be a top five quarterback tomorrow?
Ooh, top five?
Absolutely.
Top five?
Who's better than Brady?
At age 47, coming off a year
Who's better?
I'm not denying he couldn't still play, but top five?
All right. Put somebody you would put ahead of him.
Well, I'd put Mahomes.
Okay.
I'd put Burrow.
Okay. There you got two.
I would put Herbert. Allen.
Okay.
Josh Allen. I'd put Brock Purdy.
If Tom Brady went to San Francisco right now, he'd beat Purdy out.
Really?
Come on.
You think so?
I love Purdy. Purdy's my guy.
Yeah.
But come on. It's Tom freaking Brady.
How much are you influenced by your love of Tom Brady? You got blinders on.
I don't have blinders.
You got Brady.
You came up with
you
three.
You got Brady
You
blinders.
Came up with three quarterbacks.
I could have keep coming up with more.
Could you?
Matthew Stafford.
Could you? Could you?
No. How about Jalen Hurts, which leads to this?
No.
Jalen Hurts.
No.
Jalen Hurts, speaking for the first time since offense coordinator Brian Johnson, longtime friend, was fired and replaced by Kellen Moore.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
You may.
This thing, 47 years old.
Oh, you still want to talk about Brady. Shocker.
47 years old. You know, I mean, you're getting to the age where... You know, you may have to roll up your balls and put them in your... Like, if I get a hole in my underpants, like right now, I got to tuck my nuts into my socks.
Oh, jeez.
I've gotten to the age where those things are swinging. Like, Tom Brady in the locker room at 47 years old? You know, with an old man, like... You know how you go to the gym and the old man is like this?
Yes.
He's like, he's just standing there naked.
Jeez. Yep.
Yeah, you
yep.
know.
Yep.
Right? Yep. That's where Tom Brady is right now in his career.
Or worse, old guy in the gym, got his...
Zero ass, too. Like his,
no
his,
ass.
No, it's just a lower back with a crack in
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
And what is it with old guy at the gym who not only wants to put his foot up...
Right, but like then air he uses out his
a,
junk.
But then he uses like a hair dryer.
Oh, yeah.
What's
right?
with hair dryers?
I don't.
What's
I
with
don't.
The hair dryer?
You see Brady up there, leg up on there. He's drying his yarbles up. I mean, he's getting to that age.
Yeah, he's getting that age.
What is it with old dudes at the gym that have zero modesty?
Oh,
they
man.
Just don't care
we
anymore.
We could do a whole podcast on old
just,
guy at the gym.
They don't care
they
anymore.
They don't give two Fs
Yeah, sorry.
Anymore.
I just thought about how your the gravitational effect on your nuts. And that's a scientific, there's a scientific fact
yeah,
in that.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly when it happens, but
so if you get a hole in your tighty whities, you gotta
tuck it right into my socks. I'll take care of that. I'll take care of that with a new pair of underpants tomorrow.
You need a harness or something, right? Okay, where was I? Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts talking about. So he's gone from Shane Steichen,
yes,
to Brian Johnson, and now he's gonna have. Kellen Moore. Not surprisingly, he said, quote, I think as a player, I definitely yearn for the sustainability and the consistency there. I yearn for those things in a play caller and a quarterback coach because you kind of see how consistency in those areas can breed excellence.
Yeah.
Are they jerking around Jalen Hurts here?
No, but I think there is, I think like with a lot of different things, there are guys or there are people, whether, and we all have had these people in our lives, whether it was a coach, whether it was a teacher, that spoke a language that you just understood, that make things simple. And I think one thing about Shane Steichen, and Shane's a good dude, but Shane, the way he calls plays, the way he describes how you're going through things, I think he just has a sense that makes it really easy for a quarterback. It's like I took a computer programming class when I was in college. I think I got a D.
But how did you pass the final? Took the professor out for beers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was when I was young, so I wasn't up to – I would have gotten a B had I been later in my career.
Oh, this was in high school?
No, this was in college. Oh, okay. It was my first year in college when I didn't know –
you hadn't learned yet.
Right, I hadn't learned how to kiss up to the professors. Yeah. So, but one of the things about computer programming was, you know, if this, then this, right?
Flowcharts.
Like, right, yeah. The whole flowchart aspect of it. Go to, if this, go to, yeah, whatever. So one of the things that I have learned talking to Shane Steichen and then also talking to Justin Herbert when he came into the league as a rookie is it was very cut and dry. If you get this, this is where we go with the football. If you get this, then we go here with the football. And it became very much, how can you simplify the game that you take in through your eyes and discern that information so as soon as you see it, bam, instant decisions. As opposed to, hey, man, we want to look at this, then we want to look at this, then we want, you know. And I think Steichen has that ability to really do that for a quarterback. And I think that's what makes him so good. And I think Jalen Hurts had that, played exceptionally well, and then you had somebody else delivering the message. And even if you're running the same stuff, you know, it's like a golf swing when you get 14 different golf, you know, swing processes in your head. You're just not going to hit it very well. And so the kind of keep it simple, stupid process is so important. And I think that's a big thing. Now, can Kellen Moore develop that? And how much is Kellen Moore committed to running the football and some of the RPO and some of the read zone stuff and some of the concepts, you know, the quarterback run concepts, and how much of it is a drop back game? That's the question I would have.
So let's play a little game here right now.
Okay.
Jalen Hurts is a fill-in-the-blank quarterback.
Jalen Hurts is a fill-in-the-blank quarterback. You want me to fill the blank in?
Mm-hmm.
That's the game we're playing.
That's the game we're playing.
Jalen Hurts is a...
You know where I'm going with this. Is he
right.
Elite?
Yeah.
Is franchise, he, overrated, under it, whatever.
Yeah, I think that, well, what's your definition? Elite and then goes franchise? Elite, then franchise?
So Patrick Mahomes is elite.
Okay. Tom Brady, elite. Even at 47. Go, continue.
He's elite, Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers, elite. When he's Aaron Rodgers, yeah, is elite.
So I would say
Joe Burrow, though, is a
franchise
quarterback.
I would think that he's above a starter. I think he's a franchise quarterback. And I think he's
not elite.
I don't think he's elite yet because because last year there were growing pains, and last year they struggled some. And as they tried to develop more of a drop back game, his game wasn't as good as it was the year before. Some of that is play calling. Some of that is, you know, your development. So I would say he's a franchise quarterback, but he still has a ways to go to become an elite franchise quarterback.
Big difference last year compared to the year before. Interceptions went from 6 interceptions to 15 interceptions, mm-hmm. with the touchdowns basically staying the right. same. You ready to get to some questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get some questions. This one is from W.V. Kunter.
Kunter.
Mark, your thoughts on Washington bringing so many prospects in at one time. It was kind of fascinating. So every team in the NFL is allowed 30
visits,
okay? They chose to bring a bunch of them together all in at once, mm-hmm. including pretty much all the top quarterback prospects as well. What do you make of that? What's the strategy behind that?
I don't know, other than you want to get them all together to get a feel for each one of them. But the bottom line, I guess it is to diffuse the situation or to send up a smoke signal that, hey, we're not completely decided yet.
Or maybe see how these guys interact with each other. Maybe you start to get a real sense of who's an alpha type
personality. I guess, yeah. I mean, that would be the one thing that would make sense to me. Who's the real leader? Who's the guy that takes charge? Who's the guy, you know, I guess. But, I mean, come on. It's a foregone conclusion. The first two picks, right? Aren't they? Although there's still enough out there about Drake May at number 2. There's still enough. But it feels like it's a foregone conclusion that draft starts at 3 with New England. Because it feels like Caleb Williams going 1 is a lock and Jaden Daniels going 2 is a lock.
Yeah. But
that's
then
what
it feels
like.
And you know, it's funny, and the way that things change, and again, these guys have not thrown a pass in anger since November and December. And yet it feels like maybe Drake May, his stock is starting to go back up again. And J.J. McCarthy's might be slipping a little bit to the point where you're starting to, again, hear whatever that means.
Right.
But you're starting to hear that maybe McCarthy might be available for teams like the Broncos at 12 or the Raiders in the mid-teens there.
Yeah, yeah. The Raiders at 13 or Minnesota at 11.
Right.
So, yeah, it just depends. I mean, so much of the information, as we know, is just, you know, garbage. But, yeah, it is an interesting kind of tactic to bring everybody in together. That does interest me some.
All right. This one comes in from our pal Duff.
Okay.
Who says, who is the most overrated prospect in this year's draft?
Wow. Well, we focus.
Go ahead. Just get it out.
What?
Let the hate out in your heart. What, any one of the receivers?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Come on.
No.
You love trashing receivers.
No, no.
Future divas.
I'm not.
These guys are the future divas of the league.
I am not going to trash the receiver prospects. I refuse. Wow,
such growth.
Right. Instead, I'll trash the quarterbacks. the guy that to me has the biggest bust factor written all over him is Drake May.
Because he's a Carolina quarterback?
I think loopy mechanics don't change even if you try to tighten them up for your pro day. Inconsistencies throwing the ball underneath. I'm not worried about your ability to scramble and make a big play or your ability to throw a deep post and connect. I'm worried about the boring and making the standard play, you know, throwing the flat, throwing the curl, throwing the comeback, like the stuff that you have to be able to complete in the NFL. Those are the things that I'm more concerned about. So, like, he may be great, but if you took a survey of guys who analyze the game, I'd say his potential bust factor is as high as anybody's, if not the highest.
Last one from Young BG. I guess he comes after you a lot.
Oh, Young BG hates me.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
He hates me.
Well, this would seem to indicate it. Mark, would anyone know your name without your affiliation to John Elway?
Would anybody know my name without my affiliation to John Elway?
That John
kind of carried you.
Right. John
made
was,
you.
By the way, John was 0-3 in Super Bowls that he didn't play with me. He was 2-0 in Super Bowls he did play with me.
Coincidence?
I think not.
I think not.
I did win one in Washington. I've been on TV, Young BG, for the last 24 years. So I think there's more people out there that follow me via my television career that have no idea that I played with John Elway. By the way, nobody in the NFL that plays right now currently knows that I played. They're just like, wow, you must work out. You're pretty big. That's how it always operates. So
what was the story in Washington?
Well,
you did a game in Washington?
I did a game Chicago on the road.
Yeah, that's right.
Where were they? I think they were in Detroit. Chicago and Detroit on the road. And Montez Sweat comes into our production meeting. Montez is a big dude, right? Right after he got traded from Washington.
Yeah.
And he comes in, you know, kind of dap him up, whatever, and he kind of grabs me and goes, dude, you're swole. Like, did you used to play? And I go, yeah, I played. And he goes, where, college? I said, yeah, I played in college. And he's like, huh, pretty big. And he sits down, and my producer goes, you don't know who he is? And he's like, I don't know. I don't have any. He goes, well, when you were at the Washington facility, you used to walk by his picture every day. He's right there with a Super Bowl trophy. He goes, huh? He goes, yeah, he played in Washington for 6 years before he went to Denver, went to Pro Bowls and won 3 Super Bowls. He goes, oh, like, who knew? Like that's typical of today's players.
So when you were last week, for those who don't know, you got invited up to
see you. Yeah.
See you. You went and spent a Saturday with Deion Sanders' team. You talked to the team. You talked to the offensive linemen. Did anyone know who you were? Or did Deion have to lay out your bona fides?
Yeah, I mean Deion introduced me.
Yeah,
but but mostly the coaches, like. Coaches know me, right? But some of the players who grew up around here or grew up Bronco fans and know the history through their, you know, through their parents, they knew. But how much do they really know me? Have they ever actually seen me play? Maybe a Super Bowl highlight or something, but no. For the most part, the kids don't know. But they do know one thing.
What's that?
I whip their ass in the weight room. Ain't one kid on that team at CU that can lift with me. Guarantee it. Not one.
Not one.
Zero.
Like some of those big offensive linemen, Jordan
Zero.
Seaton would not be able to outlift.
Not
you.
Even close.
Sounds like a challenge to me.
I'm just telling you. I'll come in there and whip some ass, some 18-year-olds. Bring it. Hey, for everybody involved in the Seek Truth Podcast, I am Mark Sarth. He is Mike Evans. Thank you so much for making us a part of the day. And we will be back with you guys next week. Draft week, guys. Get excited.